Hello, this is Janice Kaufman, and you're listening to Baltimore Internet Radio. This is my show called It's Not Personal, It's Business. It's a show about small business in Baltimore and in the United States. Our guest today is Chef Todd Moore. This is a small business story about how you can follow your passion as opposed to just the money, and it can bring you happiness, fulfillment, and a good living. Welcome.
Thank you, Janice.
Todd. Should we call you Todd or Chef Todd?
If we're not working in a kitchen together, you can call me Todd.
Okay. Well, Chef Todd's passion is to bring a new revolution to cooking to the world, to free people from the limitations and intimidations of the written recipe, and empower them to cook like an artist paints or a musician plays with artistic interpretation and basic methods.
Well said.
It was, and you wrote it. So,
that's why.
Yeah. So, a little background on you. You have a Bachelor's of Arts in Communications and Broadcasting from Long Island University, and you started your career in advertising and marketing with WABC in New York and in management positions at radio stations, strangely enough, in Philadelphia, Columbia, South Carolina, and Raleigh. I think you worked in the outdoor billboard advertising industry for a while, and you found yourself as a regional sales manager, but it just didn't fulfill you.
Yes.
Yeah. So you quit and sold everything and enrolled in culinary school because that's where your heart lay in cooking. So, you went to Baltimore International Culinary College, which is just down the street from the studio, and you earned a dual culinary associate's degree in professional cooking and baking, and now you are combining your passion for cooking and your knowledge of business. I'm reading from your bio, but it says that you worked for NSA, so maybe you might, well, what
I can't
what
tell
you could,
about
yeah.
that. Those are very secret recipes, as a matter of fact. Yeah, you make me sound like I'm 80 years old.
Right, no.
You're really a young guy.
You're 22, right?
Bless you. And yes, I have the perfect face for radio.
So you worked at NSA. Can you tell us anything about what it was like to work at NSA?
Well, fortunately, I was there before September 11th, so I'm sure it's much different now. But I was a chef at the National Security Agency. And one of the funnier stories is obviously there's a lot of security at the NSA. And I always, each day I'd have to show up to work and I'd have my knife kit with me, all my knives. And I would have to be escorted back to the kitchen because they wouldn't let me carry knives around the NSA, only to look at them usually and say, you realize when I get to the kitchen, there are going to be more knives there. You know? So it was a little strange. But you touched on a lot of things in my bio there. And I think what I want to do just to kind of bring that together is, I've followed the money at first. When I got out of college the first time, it was all about expensive suits and company car and, you know, the idea of getting a gold watch after 30 years. These are things that my parents imparted to me. Right. Really, my father, you know, got on the train, went to work every day. My mother was a nurse. These were workaday people, and they could raise a family with that kind of workaday life. But when I tried to follow it, when I started to follow it, I found that there was a tremendous lack of passion there. I was doing things because I had to do them, and I was pretty good at it. I started at different radio stations. I created a radio station at Long Island University. We played all heavy metal music in the mid-80s, which upset some and thrilled others. But, you know, that led me into management, sales management, general sales management. And I turned around and said, is this really what I enjoy doing? Is this what I want to do day in and day out for the rest of my life? And, you know, the answer quickly became no. I don't know if anyone's ever wished that they got sick so they didn't have to go to work or even wish for a minor car accident. You know, I found myself in that situation having these horrible thoughts to try and avoid the things that I was supposed to do every day of my life to the end of my life. This is my career. This is what defines me. And I started to realize those things don't have to define you. Really, your passion in life is what defines you. So I had call it a catharsis, call it a breakdown, if you'd like.
Epiphany
is a much better word, thank you. But I was a good amateur cook. You know, I liked to cook. I basically had five dishes that I could cook. And I find most people have five things that they can do from memory. And anytime you try and go beyond your memory and go to a written recipe, you're frustrated and you're disappointed in some regard. People tell me, oh, this recipe works and that recipe doesn't work. Well, you know, a recipe doesn't teach you to cook any more than sheet music teaches you how to play piano. Just because you have the written instructions, what you don't have is the artistic ability behind it. So I took my five recipes that I knew how to do, and in a week's time, literally, people overuse the word literally. My hair was not literally on fire, as people say, but literally in a week's time, I quit my job, which is a very lucrative job as a regional sales manager, company car, expense account, nice suits, good amount of money. Quit my job, sold my home, had a tremendous garage sale, sold everything I owned, and I went to Gibby's Seafood Restaurant in Timonium. Mm-hmm. People may remember Gibby's from back when, and I steamed oysters in the back of the restaurant. From $6 to $6 an hour in one afternoon is the way that I describe it. But at least I was setting out to find my passion in that mm-hmm. regard. I enrolled at Baltimore International College, which doesn't exist anymore, sadly, and started to find out the hows and whys behind cooking. And then there was a depth to my five recipes that I understood why a sauce thickens, or I understood why some things get brown and other things don't get brown, or I understood how sauces evaporate and reduction. And I started to learn the basic methods behind these things, and this opened my eyes tremendously. It's like teaching the piano teacher what chord A is or chord C is. The written recipe or the sheet music is only a hint in what that piano player is going to play. How he works the pedals, how he fingers the keys is actually how the music comes out. So to come full circle to what you were saying, I came out of culinary school with all my management experience, and I wound up at the National Security Agency. And we were cooking for 15,000 people twice a day. Mm-hmm. 15,000 people twice a day. So like when we made soup, it was in a cauldron that you could put five people in to bathe, which we didn't do. Don't worry. But we stirred it with an oar on a ladder. And, you know, I came to the realization that whether you're cooking for 15,000 people or whether you're cooking for two people, the cooking methods are the same. When we made lasagna for 15,000 people, do you think there was a recipe? One forklift worth of ricotta cheese, you know, two pallets of mozzarella. No, there's no recipe. We didn't take a recipe for five people and expand it to 15,000 because it would have said 22,000 teaspoons of salt. Now, are they going to pay someone to stand there and dish out 22,000 teaspoons? No, you have to use the basic cooking methods. This is what empowered me. From there, I was an entrepreneur. I had a catering company. I opened a cooking school. The cooking school led me to decide to do some videos on YouTube, and I figured I'd do about five cooking videos on YouTube, and this would bring people to my local cooking school at the time in Raleigh, North Carolina. Well, foolish me, you put videos on YouTube, they don't just go to Raleigh, North Carolina. They go all over the world. I developed a following of thousands of people very quickly, wound up doing more than 200 cooking videos on YouTube, and it turned into webcookingclasses.com. Now I'm reaching people globally with this really unique insight into cooking that it's not about the written recipe. It's about the methods that you apply, and this transcends the recipe. So to continue the analogy, you know, it's like teaching a piano player how to play the piano, not just one song, but then the song that's in his head, he can put through his fingers and come out with an artistic endeavor. The painter, you know, why is cooking the only art form that has strict written instructions? Would you tell a painter, take 1.7 ounces of green paint, paint for 22 minutes, and you'll have a landscape? Painter will go, dude, I'm going to paint with as much green paint as I want, and when I'm done painting, that's when I'm done. That's how we should cook, with the ingredients you desire to your desired results. So that's how a guy that grew up as a corporate muckety-muck really tried to find his passion and wound up really changing people's lives all over the world. I get emails every day from people that say, this has changed my life in one way or another way. So when you talk about success and wealth, I can make some money on the internet. I'm more concerned with the thank you emails that I get. I'm more concerned with furthering that mission because it really does help people.
Well, I know in the economy that we're living in, it's important that people are able to feed themselves with what's available to them. Not to make the people that I know that own restaurants angry, but it's more expensive to eat out than it is to eat at home. So it can save quite a bit of money.
Well, that's true. And I'm a professional chef, so I would not discourage anyone from going to your local L-O-C-A-L, your local restaurant. The chains don't help your local chef. But that soapbox aside, I don't know anyone that goes out to dinner 7 nights of the week. Really, what I'm talking about is a lot of these takeout foods, the convenience foods, the microwavable foods that have so many additives, preservatives,
salt. They're not good for you.
They're not helping you. When fresh ingredients, the difference between the prepared ingredients and the fresh ingredients are dramatic on your health, on your well-being.
I know there's so much salt in the prepackaged stuff.
And you know, you don't have to be like a crunchy granola type. I'm not talking about living a granola lifestyle. I'm talking about, are you tired at the end of the day?
Right.
Are you tired at 3 o'clock? I mean, maybe it's the amount of sugar or salt or the things that you're eating. I'm not saying this is going to take 100 pounds off you. That doesn't have to be the goal. It can be. But how about better hair and nails? How about a better attention span? How about more energy in the day? Those are the things that the fuel you put in your body does, and learning to cook at home is the best way to control the food that goes in your mouth.
Let's talk a little bit about your webcookingschool.com.
Webcookingclasses.com.
Sorry, webcookingclasses.com.
Webcookingclasses.com.
Now, how many videos do you offer? What, one a week, or how does this work?
There are multiple videos. It is a membership website, and you go to webcookingclasses.com. There is actually a free cooking class to start, and it's a basic saute method. This is the number one thing that I teach. But the classes, if people decide to continue, it's actually a 48-week program that's broken into 3 modules. First 16 weeks is basic cooking skills, second is advanced, third is pro. And people can come and go as they please, cancel and come back on and so on. You can cancel at any time in that regard.
Right.
But to answer your question, you get a 15 to 20-minute cooking method video delivered to a private access web page every week. There's not a single recipe in the 48-week program. It is all how to saute, how to broil, how to roast, how to boil, simmer, poach, how to braise, how to grill, how to make sauces, thickening agents and what they mean, even into baking and what leavening means, leavening products, how to make your muffins higher. No recipes, but the how-to of it.
Okay, what about knife skills?
Yes, plenty of knife skills.
Okay.
I don't know if you've noticed, but when you shop at the farmer's market, the stuff doesn't come already cut
up. I picked up on that.
So there are some basic underlying skills that you really do need to cook at home. Now, you don't need to be a professional chef to do it. This is another one of the intimidations and one of the problems I have with food TV. You know, food TV is like the MTV of food, I always say. MTV used to play music.
Right.
Now it's entertainment about
it's
music.
It's all competition shows.
Yeah. The food TV does not teach anyone to cook. It's entertainment about food.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's fun to watch, but if you really want to learn how to use a chef's knife correctly so that you can use fresh ingredients, if you want to learn the simplest way to cook is sauté.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, that's the first free class in webcookingclasses.com. But sauté is very simple. And the demonstration that I do, if you'll allow me a minute, sauté method is this. Step one, pan hot. Right off the bat, this is the biggest mistake that home cooks make. They start with a cold pan. They put a cold chicken breast in a cold pan. The two of them heat up together. The first thing it does is release all its moisture. So step one, pan hot. How do you tell when the pan's hot? Well, most people do the hand hover. They hover their hand over the pan. That tells you nothing but how hot the air above the pan is. I want to be able to cook in a quantifiable way. Plus, a written recipe will tell you to heat the pan for 3 to 5 minutes or whatever. I mean, that's very variable as well. But what if you stuck your hand in a little bit of water, sprinkled water onto the pan, and you saw the water evaporate? Well, we should know from 8th grade high school that water evaporates at 212 degrees. So you can see that pan, tangibly, observationally, that pan is 212 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Proteins coagulate. They stiffen and shrink. This is the mark of cooking. And this happens at 165 degrees Fahrenheit. You know coagulation of proteins if you've ever made a hamburger on a grill. Cooked a raw hamburger, twice as big as the cooked hamburger. Chicken breast in a pan, raw, twice as big as the cooked. They stiffen, they shrink, they turn white or they turn gray. This is called coagulation of protein. So if you need 165 degrees to cook in a saute pan and you sprinkle water and it's 212 degrees, you can now observe that your pan is ready to cook.
Mm-hmm.
This is the type of observational cooking. Step one, pan hot. Step two, some kind of fat. We want to add olive oil or butter or walnut oil, safflower, any kind of fat you want. It really doesn't matter. Step one, pan hot. Step two, some kind of fat. Step three, fat hot. Another mistake, cold fat in a hot pan cools the pan. You want to heat the fat. And generally, when we use olive oil or oils and things like that, you want to heat that fat until just before it begins to smoke. Well, that's kind of strange. I mean, how do you tell just before something's about to happen? And, you know, the story I always tell, my wife and I spent our honeymoon in Hawaii. And the tour book said, the best snorkeling spot is 2/10 of a mile before the end of the road. I had never been there. I don't know where 2/10 of a mile before the end.
You don't know where the end of the road is.
You go to the end of the road and you come back 2/10 of a mile. That's how you figure it out. Well, once the oil starts smoking in your pan, there's no turning back. Yeah. Now you got to get rid of it and start again. But the way that you can tell is oil goes from being perfectly smooth in the pan when you first put it in there to being ripply and striated right before it's going to begin to smoke. So if you tip the pan back and forth, just enough oil to barely coat the bottom of the pan, tip it back and forth against the light, you'll see it's like legs on your wine glass. You know, wine aficionados, they swish their wine glass around. The legs run down the side. You'll see those legs in the pan. This shows you that the oil is ready to cook now. Now comes your protein product, chicken breast, beef, shrimp, fish, anything you want. It doesn't matter. Protein product. Here's another big one. Cook 75% the first side and up to 25% on the second side. Cook it as much as you can on one side because you can observe the changes that happen to it. If you put a chicken breast in a pan, psh, 2, 3, 4, 5, flip it over, psh, then you're just looking at a brown piece of chicken.
Right.
You've lost all the indicators, the visual indicators of whether this is done or not. Don't cook for 3 to 5 minutes. Cook until you observe it. So pan hot first, some kind of fat. Fat hot. Protein product, 75% one side, up to 25% the other side. You can remove that protein product now and saute aromatics. Onion, garlic, celery, carrots, whatever it might be. And then at some point, that pan's going to start to get too hot. You've got fond on the bottom of the pan. Those rendered brown materials. That's the bed of your sauce. So the next step is a deglazing liquid, whether it's wine or juice or broth, just not water. Nothing has less flavor than water. Don't cook with water. But you add a liquid. The liquid drops the temperature of the pan quickly and dramatically. It releases the fond from the pan. Now you have this nice pan sauce, and now you're cooking in a moist method. So you put those chicken breasts back in the pan with the moist method, finish cooking them that way. Now they're brown because of the intense heat at first, and they're moist because of the liquid that you put in. Then you can take that sauce, reduce or thicken. Either let it evaporate or add something that's thicker than what you have. Tomato paste, goat cheese, pureed beans, or if we get into sauce making, things like roux or cornstarch slurry. So I call this my South of France chicken. And when I do in my demos, I make the South of France chicken with a 9-step saute method. Then I look at the audience and generally pick someone out, look them in the eye and say, oh, you didn't like that, did you? And they go, hem and a hem and a hem. I say, all right, how about South of Mexico chicken? Pan hot first, some kind of fat, fat hot, protein product. How about instead of the onions, jalapenos? And instead of the white wine, tequila or margarita mix. Now it's Mexican chicken. Okay, you don't like that. How about South of Rome chicken? Pan hot first, some kind of fat, fat hot, protein product, 75, 25. Instead of the onions, how about garlic? Instead of the white wine, how about red wine? Add tomatoes, it's South of Rome chicken. Okay, you don't like that. How about South of Taiwan chicken? Pan hot first, some kind of fat, fat hot, protein product, 75, 25. Deglaze with coconut milk, a scoop of peanut butter. Okay, you don't like that. How about South of China chicken? We put garlic in the pan. We deglaze with some soy sauce. Okay, you don't like that. How about South of Greece chicken? There's olives, there's feta cheese, there's sambuca. Okay, you don't like that. I can write 15 recipes from the one method. And that's what I try and empower people with.
Well, here's, just to throw a little monkey wrench there, because I'm thinking about this web cooking class for a friend of mine who should be listening to this show, and you know who you are, and she happens to be a vegetarian. So obviously she's not going to be cooking chicken or shrimp. She doesn't like shrimp.
Okay.
But she likes fish fillets.
Great.
And setine, that awful meat substitute made.
Yeah. Well, look, I don't care what you cook. Mm-hmm. You cook it in the same way.
Right.
Unless you've invented a new way to impart heat to food, which we haven't since cavemen, Well, that's not entirely true. We have irradiation now and things. But anyway, unless you're inventing...
Sous vide.
Yeah, sous vide, things like that, which is, people that don't know, it's in a vacuum bag in simmering liquid. It was developed for the airline industry, as a matter of fact, when you think about
and
it.
And you know their food's so fabulous.
Oh, yeah, it's excellent, excellent. But to answer the question about your vegetarian friend, when I say chicken breast, make a tofu. Or Indian paneer, or a garden burger, or something like that. Now, these items don't render as much fat on the bottom of the pan. You won't get that fond, so you might need to figure out other methods for making sauces if you needed to. But still, pan hot first, some kind of fat, fat hot, protein product, aromatics, deglaze, reduce, or thicken. I don't care what the items in the pan are. It's the same thing. I don't care if it's for 2 people or 15,000 people. It's the same thing. And this was the aha moment for me. This was like, why do people run around looking for a specific recipe? Mm-hmm. It's like learning how to cook all over again every night. When you could have the basic underlying methods, and this is where people go to their pantry now. Mm-hmm. This is where they look in their pantry, and it's this, I'm doing air quotes right now, throwing things together, mm-hmm. although I hate doing air quotes, but throwing, the best cooks always tell me that they just throw things, my grandma just threw things together, and this is cooking by method. This is where you say, oh, I got a little bit of this, I got a little bit of that. Do you go find a recipe for a little bit of this and a little bit of that? No, you make it up and go forward with your personal likes and desires. And, mm-hmm. and this is where people go. You know, it comes down to the limitations of the written recipe. And we're often taught that you have to have a recipe to do this. But let me give you a few examples. Recipe says one onion chopped. Now, I've seen onions the size of softballs. I've seen onions the size of pearls. How big is this one onion that I've chopped? When it says cook under medium heat. Now, medium heat on the stove in my culinary lab, 60,000 BTUs on the burner. Go home for your electric glass top stove, 15,000 BTU. How can you say medium? How do you quantify medium? The worst is cooking by time. Mm-hmm. Do this, do this, do this, do this. Cook for 20 minutes. How does Martha Stewart know?
Martha Stewart.
How does she know? Knows. How does she know how thick my pan is? How does she know how thick the chicken breast is?
Well, she knows you're using a Martha Stewart pan.
How does she know what altitude I live at? How does she know how hot my stove gets? How does she know all the variables mm-hmm. that go into cooking by recipes? And this is why people tell me that recipes either work or don't work.
Right.
It's like saying my golf clubs work or don't work, or my tennis racket didn't work today. It's how you apply the recipe. So these limitations are really what makes cooking by recipes difficult.
Well, I also have another question to throw another monkey wrench there, because I consider myself a pretty decent cook, but I actually do this method of yours. I do a lot of sautéing and making sauces and things, but I use a non-stick pan because I think that that way I don't have to use as much fat. And I'm concerned because I've read things about heating up a Teflon-coated pan with no fat in it, that you can get there's a vapor that comes off, which is not good.
Yeah, well, that's actually true. You don't ever want to put a Teflon or nonstick pan into your oven and heat it up in a convective fashion.
Without fat in it.
With fat or without. You don't want to put it, well, you don't want to put, I'm talking about in the oven.
No, I've put mine in the oven.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
I don't put it in. It's got fat or sauce or something in it. It's not like dry, but.
Well, it's at 500 degrees.
This starts to happen.
Okay, that's the other quantifier. So it needs to be totally surrounded by heat, not just by the heat on the bottom and over 500 degrees. The bigger concern that I have with Teflon pans is, you know, when you got a scratch in it, do you know where that stuff went? In your food. You know, you ate it. So if anyone out there is looking at a scratched Teflon pan, understand that you ate whatever is missing from that pan. As soon as you have a scratch in it, you got to get rid of it. It's just that's the bigger issue in that regard. The thing that you miss with cooking with Teflon pans, and I think Teflon pans are excellent for the following things.
Eggs?
Grilled cheese. Maybe grilled.
Eggs?
All right. I can't think of much that they're actually good for. But
that's actually one of the things I do like. Eggs. Eggs because they're hard to... come on.
True,
you know, fried
true.
Eggs
scrambled eggs and so on. But your question was about the amount of fat for non-sticking. Mm-hmm. All right, twofold. First of all, the Teflon pans, one of the disadvantages of it is you don't get the fond, the rendered fat and material on the bottom of the pan. You still get some fond.
Yeah.
Okay. It will help you with more flavorful sauces to have a non-stick pan. The other issue is that you can emulate what a non-stick pan does with a greater amount of fat. Now, that doesn't help you if you're trying to reduce fat. I don't immediately go to these usually, but my first suggestion would be use a better fat, a polyunsaturated fat. Use really good olive oils and use less of it. Or in the worst case scenario, use some of that pan spray or something if you're really concerned about that. But, you know, my concern would be about building flavor, because I find the people that try and reduce fat in their food, that they feel they miss that mouth feel. They miss the flavor of it.
Well, what if you're heating your fat up along with your pan at the same time?
Should be pan hot first.
Okay, because that's hot. I mean, that's usually how I handle it is I put the fat in and I'm heating the pan and the fat at the same time.
Yeah, it should be pan hot first. But none of this is wrong. You know, again, I'm not here to be a snotty chef and tell people that they're wrong. I'm here to try and inspire people to do things for their likes and desires. Mm. So I won't ever tell someone that they're wrong. I may tell them there's a better way or a lesser way or whatever it might be. But if you dig it, do it. If you really dig it, do it twice. It's a Jim Croce quote from way back when. But if it's good to you, it's good. That's what I say.
Well, I mean, in my defense, I am using a nonstick pan that was a gift from a restaurant chef that was gotten from a commercial restaurant store. So the quality of it and the quality of the nonstick, I mean, I've been using this thing probably for almost 10 years, and there's not a single scratch on it.
Well, you bring up another good point. I mean, you buy a $10 aluminum pan at Target, it's not going to wear, and it won't give you the benefits of like an all-clad pan that might be $100. And that has to do with the metal that's underneath it and what pans are made of in that regard. And, you know, it comes down to there are really only two ways to impart heat to food.
Mm-hmm.
There's conductive heat and convective heat. And as soon as people understand that they have control over the heat, they become better cooks. And to me, cooking, the definition of cooking, is how you control heat. It's really that simple, how you control heat. The demonstration that I do in my live events is I'll have an oven, and I'll get the oven to 500 degrees. And I say, here's a 500-degree oven. And I open the oven, I roll up my sleeve, and I stick my arm in the oven. And people go, oh, but of course my arm isn't burnt. And I can sit there for 10 seconds or so. But then I go over to the stovetop. And I turn on the gas burner, roll up my sleeve, and I feign as if I'm going to put my hand over the flame. And people, oh, no, no. And I turn and say, why not? My arm wasn't burned in the oven, but it would be burned immediately on the stove. Well, this has to do with direct application or indirect application of heat. In an oven, the food is cooked with hot air. The air circulates around in the oven. Air is the worst conductor of heat there is. If air was a good conductor of heat, when winter came, you would heat your house to 70, turn the heat off, and it would stay 70 until spring. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that that's not the case.
Yeah,
your heat cycles on constantly. Air is a terrible conductor of heat. So when you put something in the oven, think about this. The evaporation of moisture point arrives. The dry air is drying things out. But if you go on the sauté, on the stovetop, those reactions to food happen very quickly. They get brown before they dry out. So your first decision is applying heat indirectly or directly. Indirectly, roasting, simmering, poaching, steaming, smoking. Directly, broiling, grilling, sauté. Brulee, if you will, things like that. You're applying it directly or indirectly, you'll have dramatically different results.
I think this has been really interesting. And let me get to some of my specific questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think we've gotten a little bit from what we've discussed already, but who is Chef Todd Moore?
Were,
what's the Barbara Walters question? If you were a plant or a tree?
If I was a twee?
Yeah.
All right, Baba.
Sorry.
If I was a twee, Chef Todd Moore is a guy that was on a prescribed path that someone else prescribed for him. Not till he did he stop and turn and look for the trees. did he decide what his passion is? You know, and in these days, you've got to find something that you feel like you can be the best in the world at. And I don't care if it's on a large scale or a small scale. I love watching the news and seeing people volunteering for their local organizations, people helping people. There's a story on the news this morning of a woman that gave up her spot on the Olympic team for her. I mean, people that do things for other people. Success is no longer money. I mean, there's a percentage of this population where everything is about money. To me, success is enjoyment over the small amount of time that I have and control over my time. If I can positively affect other people, oh my goodness, what a reward that is. Mm-hmm. That's success. So who's Chef Todd Moore? He's a guy that woke up. Yeah, he's a guy that at some point said, look, I need to do, success or not, I need to do what I love doing. And it's amazing how when you do what you love doing, the success seems to come.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not easy to do. I mean, really, I took my life down to the studs. I lived in poverty for years to do this, but I had, nobody could stop me. I don't care. Nobody could stop me. And if you have that passion, I don't care if it's for quilting or stamp collecting, whatever it is, if you feel like no one will stop me from doing this, you will succeed.
Okay, next question. And we've touched upon this a little bit. What is web cooking classes?
Webcookingclasses.com, it's a way to empower home cooks over the written recipe. I mean, this is a topic that the cooking world will not touch with 10-foot tongs. Nobody is going to say that recipes don't work. Mm-hmm. Why? Because the recipe book industry is a multi-kazillion dollar industry. And you know what? You have to buy more recipe books and more recipe books. And then you got to buy the Mexican recipe book and the Indonesian recipe book and the early cooking recipe book. This is an industry. When if you really want to know how to cook, learn how to cook. So webcookingclasses.com really saves people a tremendous amount of money, mm-hmm. not only on takeout foods and the convenience foods, which are more expensive than even shopping at the farmer's market. I've done the math many, many times. It helps people with their health and nutrition. It helps them with their social aspects. They bring their families back together over dinner again. They love going to potlucks now. They love to entertain. They have a greater variety of food. They have healthier food. It's amazing the freedom that people experience with this one thought that I should just go ahead with my desires, not worry about the recipe. And probably the first few that you do may not come out to your liking. Mm. And then there's an aha moment. Then it's when I did it last time and it came out like this. Now I'm going to change it this way because I have the power and ability to change the methods behind cooking, not just look for another recipe. And that's what webcookingclasses.com does. It empowers people. They don't need anything else after it. Maybe just a little creativity and some ideas.
Okay. What is the no recipe lifestyle? You've touched upon it. And who lives? Who do you think lives the no recipe lifestyle?
You know, it's funny. I've spent 5 years now teaching the world to cook with my different websites. And webcookingclasses.com is the number one. But I have 7 others that teach aspects of how to save on food, save money on food, how to cook fresh, how to make good sauces. So there's a whole series of them out there. But a no recipe lifestyle is what I find is curious people. Mm-hmm. And I've done a tremendous amount of research on this. It's really not as much mom who just wants to get dinner done tonight. You know, those are the quick and easy recipes. That I'll leave to Rachel Ray and people like that with their 30-minute meals. What I find people that really want to live a no-recipe lifestyle, which I define as lifestyle improvement through better food, it's the people that are curious, the people that would take community college courses, the people that read magazines, the people that look things up on their phone when they're asked. You know how you can't get away with lying anymore? I used to be able to make stuff up and tell my wife like I knew it. Now she takes her phone out and Googles it. So, I mean, the people that are curious, they want to know the hows and whys behind cooking. These are the people living a no recipe lifestyle.
Well, some of the questions I was going to ask you, I think we've already covered. What do you mean by cooking by basic methods? I know that you feel there's a few basic methods, what would that be?
Well, like I said, I keep making the analogy to either music or painting or any kind of art form. Everyone has an art form, whatever it might be. Whatever your hobby is, whatever you enjoy, you have an art form. And you know the basic principles behind it. Cooking without basic cooking methods would be as if every time you got in your car, you had to take out the owner's manual. Mm-hmm. Hey, what's this big wheel for? Let me look that up. Which of these pedals do I press to? No, you know how to drive the car at some point. You just drive the car. And, you know, cooking by basic methods is that you become practiced in the, like I said about saute before, the 9 steps, whether it's fish or chicken or beef or no, it doesn't matter what's in the pan. And as soon as you get that realization is it doesn't matter what's in the pan, but that you use the basic method. So saute is a method. Broiling is a method. Grilling is a method and so on, regardless of the specific recipe.
What would be the top 3 tips that you could give our audience that would change their cooking immediately?
I have a DVD that I did many years ago. It was a live filming at a wine festival, and it was called My 5 Chef Secrets for Creating Amazing Meals at Home. And I brought it down to 5 basic things. The first thing is knife skills. You really do need to learn how to use
a knife. You need to have decent knives, too.
Yes.
I can't stress the importance of having good, sharp knives out there.
Well, a dull knife is a lot more dangerous than a sharp one. Dull knife slips. Dull knife moves. You have to force a dull knife. It's a lot more dangerous.
And never put your cutting knives in the dishwasher.
No, you should not. More has to do with
the heat. Freak out with that.
Well, the heat of the dishwasher and the phosphates in the dishwashing liquid. If your knife is made out of a certain metal, if it's made out of carbon steel, which a lot of knives are, it will pit. Mm-hmm. You'll get little holes in it and things like that. But number one, knife skills are most important. And if you're like my mom, sorry, Mom, but Mom has a serrated steak knife that she got, I think, with a full tank of gas in 1974, you know, when they gave you stuff, when you filled up the... So she has this steak knife, and she uses it for cutting fish and cutting vegetables and tightening the light screw switch and cutting tags off new clothing. And I mean, it is a general household hardware item. Please get yourself a kitchen knife and use it respectfully for the kitchen.
Well, I will say I do use a serrated knife to cut tomatoes.
Oh, well, that's absolutely right, but it's and not bread. A 1974 little 4-inch knife, I'm sure. Yes.
It's not that much bigger.
Well, since you're touching on it, there are 4 basic knives that you need in your kitchen. The first is a chef's knife, or some people call a French knife. And this is the one that's wider at the heel and pointed at the tip. It's used in a rocking fashion with the tip against the cutting board. We call this the tip fulcrum method. We don't bang the knife against the cutting board. You don't do the 2 hands on the knife Metzaluna kind of thing back and forth. The object would be to cut things consistently in as few knife strokes as possible. Chef's knife. Second one is a serrated slicing knife for the things that the chef's knife would crush. Like you said, a tomato. If you come straight down on a tomato, no matter how sharp the chef knife, it'll crush it in some regard. But the teeth on a serrated slicing knife will tear through it. Mm-hmm. The third is a boning knife. This is for raw products, getting the fat off chicken, cleaning beef, used only for raw products, generally a 5 to 7 inch thin knife with a tip, and you only use it for raw products. The fourth one is a paring knife, small knife that you would use for capping strawberries, getting eyes out of potatoes, things like that. It's the only 4 knives you need in your kitchen. You do not need the set of 25 steak knives that they sell on TV.
Unless you're having 25 people over eat steak.
You got to tell me the last time you cooked steak for 25 people.
It's been a while.
Yeah, a few
Beef's
people.
Expensive out there.
Yeah, a few people do, I think. So number one. 1, knife skills. Number 2, pantry items. Cooking becomes so much easier when you don't have to make a lot of the sauces. And really, to get started, I would say make sure you have soy sauce. Make sure you have a Szechuan sauce if you like Asian cooking. Maybe there's an Indian chutney that you like. Maybe there's a salsa, a Mexican salsa. There's a jarred, I mean, I don't know what it is. Go to the international aisle of your grocery store. Pick up things that you have never seen or heard before. Practice the basic saute method, as I said, and then throw the sauce on the top of it. So stock your pantry. Mm-hmm. Have items that you can use for basic cooking methods that will add flavor and so on. The third is sauce making. If you don't want to do jarred sauces, do what grandma did way back when. Thanksgiving, grandma takes the turkey out of the oven, got all those pan drippings. She used a cornstarch slurry. Mm-hmm. She dissolved some cornstarch in a pan and she used that to thicken the sauce. It's the easiest way to thicken a sauce. A little more advanced, learn how to make a roux, a butter flour roux, and you can thicken sauces. The fourth is heat transfer. And again, understanding applying heat either directly or indirectly, applying heat with moisture or applying heat dry. Here's an aha moment that a lot of people have when I try and explain the science behind cooking. If you poach, simmer, or steam something, it never gets brown. Can't ever get brown. because you're cooking it in moisture, which doesn't get any hotter than 212 degrees. And the fifth chef secret is knowing the effect of heat on food, mm-hmm. which one of them is 320 degrees Fahrenheit, sugars caramelize. This is the brown, that beautiful brown plate appeal. When a guy in your neighborhood is cooking a steak down the street in South Baltimore or something, it's that caramelization of sugars that you smell. Somebody's cooking a steak around here. Mm-hmm. So the caramelization of sugars. So the reason that something steamed will never get brown is because it never gets hotter than 212, and caramelization of sugars is 320. Quickly, the science of food is four temperatures. 150 degrees Fahrenheit is gelatinization of starches. Mm-hmm. This is where rice cooks. You put a cup of rice, two cups of liquid in a pan, put the lid on it, 45 minutes later, hey, the water's gone, the rice is bigger. How'd that happen? Gelatinization of starches that absorb the liquid and swell. Second is coagulation of proteins, which I mentioned, the stiffening and shrinking of protein products. Third is evaporation of moisture, 212, which I mentioned. Very simple, everyone knows that. And fourth is 320 degrees caramelization of sugars. So if you can combine in your head applying heat directly or indirectly and anticipate one of these four effects of heat on food, then there are your five chef secrets to creating great meals at home. Have a pantry, use your knife skills, be able to make sauces or thicken things, or have pantry items, understand how heat is transferred to food, and then you're free. You're free from recipes.
Okay, one last question for you. What's the most often asked question of students learning to cook?
Lately, I've
been... Can you come over and cook for me?
Yeah, can you come cook my dinner? Lately, what I've been asked about more than anything else is spices, mm-hmm. herbs and seasonings right. and things like that. Some of the other questions is like how to cook quickly, you know, how to get dinner done, how to get ideas for dinner. And to me, they're all answered on webcookingclasses.com. Mm-hmm. They're all answered with this basic cooking method. You'll know what to cook when you can just open your pantry and throw things together without right. looking for a recipe. You will certainly know how to cook when you use the basic cooking methods. But as for herbs and spices, there are two bits of advice that I give to people. And first of all, herbs and spices are different. Herbs are generally the leafy part of a fresh item. Spices are generally the seeds, stalks, sticks, things like that are ground and they're dry. With herbs, herbs have oils in them. And I always make the analogy that it's like the shampoo sample pack you get at the hotel. It looks like a little teardrop thing with a tab on the end of it. And you tear the tab off and you pinch it between your fingers and you get about half a teaspoon of right. shampoo. You need 12 of them to wash your hair. But that's what like a parsley leaf or a basil leaf is like. It's like that little shampoo packet. It's filled with oils. And if you take a basil leaf and squeeze it, you'll not only see a bruise that you left on the basil leaf, but now smell your fingers. Smells like basil, cilantro especially, very, very mm-hmm. strong. So understand that these things are filled with oil, and it's the oil that gives you the flavor and the aromatic nature of it. So fresh herbs should always be added at the very end. Just barely the heat of the finished dish is where fresh herbs should go. If you put them in early, they're obliterated. Mm-hmm. The oil is gone, the flavor is gone, they're burnt, they're done. Quite the opposite for spices, though. Spices, since they're dried, they need to macerate. Fancy 10-cent culinary word, macerate, which is bringing the flavor into mm-hmm. the liquid. Then you want your overall liquid or fat to taste like it. Like in Asian, French cooking, generally they put seasoned spicing at the end. Asian cooking, they put the seasoning and spices in with the oil originally, so the entire oil is infused with it. So knowing the difference between herbs and spices first. Secondly, I do it like this, and I hope this isn't politically incorrect, but you can use ethnic profiling. You're allowed to use ethnic profiling when it comes to spices.
In cooking,
yes. Not for, even if you're a policeman at home, you can use it. Because there are combinations. And please, my advice would be just pick two. One of the biggest detriments for home cooks is they think if they use 12 spices, it's going to be better. It just confuses the palate. My students in culinary college, well, some of the first things that they do is grab armfuls of spices, and it always includes cayenne pepper for some reason. Everybody wants to make things. I don't know why. But I would say your Italian team in your ethnic profile, basil and oregano. Get a jar of basil and oregano, smell them. It should remind you of a pizza shop. Your Mexican team, cumin and coriander. Smell cumin and coriander. It'll remind you of Taco Bell or a taco or something like that. Put your ethnic spice teams together.
Well, I know Indian spices tend to be a little more complex with a lot more spices.
Well, I mean, you do have turmeric, Curry powder isn't really a spice. It's a combination of many, many spices, just like chili powder is. Mm-hmm. I would warn people against buying things that are already combined. Mm. Fajita seasoning. Look on your jar of fajita seasoning and tell me where the word salt appears first. Mm. Salt is very cheap. Salt is very heavy. If I fill up my jar of fajita seasoning with 30 to 40% salt, it cuts back on the expense of cilantro, cumin, and coriander that I might use. So make your own spice mixes. Chili powder, same thing. Curry powder. Every family in India has a family curry recipe. You know, so there's not one in particular, but yeah, there, turmeric and curry powder is your Indian ethnic profile. So put things, how about poultry, sage and thyme? You know, you can think of things. Boy, when I smell sage and thyme on a chicken breast, it reminds me of Thanksgiving at grandma's house. So you already know these things, but practicing them makes it a lot easier. Ethnic teams for your cooking for that specific style.
I think I've grilled you enough today.
Oh, good pun.
But I'm pumped. Thank you, Chef Todd Moore.
Thank you, Janice.
And just to reiterate, he has webcookingclasses.com. If you're interested in becoming a member, go and try a class for free and see if you'd be interested. And we are hoping that Chef Todd will be having a regular show with us here on Baltimore Internet Radio. So please check back again soon for his next show. We've discussed some great potential topics. And one of them could be a whole show on ethnic profiling in cooking. I know that's something I could use some help on, identifying the different spice combinations for different ethnic cuisine. But anyway,
Web Cooking Classes is a membership website, but I have so many free videos everywhere. And of course, on Web Cooking Classes, it starts out with a free class. You could take the free class, and then if it's not for you, fine. I've had thousands of people, and nobody's ever.
I have an idea. I don't know if this is something you'd be interested in. Well, and Valentine's Day is coming up. This might be kind of a fun thing, a gift for somebody, or maybe not. If it's somebody who cooks for you that thinks they're a really good cook, and then suddenly you're giving them cooking classes, but, you know, it's something that would be interesting as a gift. You offer these classes as gifts?
Certainly, yeah. Right. You have to be very careful how you approach that, like you said. But you can find me on YouTube, Chef Todd Moore on YouTube. Follow me on Facebook. I am always researching current trends in food, topics in food. Follow me on Facebook, Chef Todd Moore. And Moore is spelled M-O-H-R, T-O-D-D-M-O-H-R, Chef Todd Moore. Follow me on Twitter. I mean, I'm just a wealth of food information out there. So you don't have to be a member of Web Cooking Classes to follow what's going on, for sure.
Okay, and as I said, hopefully you'll be able to follow Chef Todd here on Baltimore Internet Radio as well. This is Janice Kaufman, and this is It's Not Personal, It's Business. Our guest again was Chef Todd Moore. Come check us out again at BaltimoreInternetRadio.com. Thank you.
Thank you, Janice.